Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
Wow, what the hell is going on with the media? You have the Barry Weiss CBS story. Then listen to this. Kristen Welker, Meet the Press, NBC News, actually asking like a decent question here.
But let me ask you, because you say this is a Republican shutdown, but it's Democratic senators who are withholding their votes on what is called a clean resolution. That means no strings attached, which is something, quite frankly, Leader, that you and other Democrats have advocated for in the past. Take a look.
You do not use the threat of shutting down government to try to advance your policy agenda.
First thing that the House has to do is pass a clean six-week CR.
A continuing resolution that is at the fiscal year 2023 levels is the only way forward.
So she plays in the actual audio, and, you know, I think that's rare, certainly in the legacy media. Richard Stern is here. He's a Heritage Scholar and expert on fiscal policy. We're going to talk about the shutdown a little bit. And then somebody brought this to my attention last week. Rand Paul has this six-penny plan to balance the budget in 5 years. And I was unfamiliar with that plan. But Richard's coming on with us this afternoon to talk about all this. How are you, Richard Stern? Thanks for coming on 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on today.
What is your overall perspective of where we are here on this, this stalemate and the shutdown? It doesn't seem like through the weekend nothing has emerged to help the Democrats in their corner. I don't see how they get out of this, you know, with their demands having any success. I think it's probably going to be a relatively short shutdown. But again, I don't know how they get out of this. Your thoughts?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Look, it's honestly a lunatic thing that elected Democrat leadership are putting forward. And I think that's why it's been so hard for most people to have a real handle on exactly how long the shutdown will be, because, you know, usually you're used to rational actors who have real asks that make real sense. But, you know, literally elected Democrat leadership are shutting down the government because what they want to do is give $1.5 trillion of welfare to illegal aliens. Now, not all of it will go to them, but they want it to be available to them. And of course, the rest of that is more to the national debt and more inflation that'll crush American families. So, you know, look, I think one of two things is going to break here. Either elected Democrat leadership are doing this to posture, and they're hoping that enough of their moderates finally break or solid, or they're hoping that they can get Republicans to come to the table and make a deal. But they don't seem like they're running out of steam at all right now.
Yeah, I mean, there was an indication. I saw something in the Wall Street Journal, I think, on Friday, or one of the outlets, that said that the Trump administration was open to, you know, having discussions about the subsidies. But I believe any of those discussions are going to happen after they reopen the government, right? So I don't know if it's something as simple as that to say, look, we're committed to having discussions on this. These expire in December. There seems to be a group that is less extreme, that Democrats I'm speaking of in the Senate, that might understand that this thing needs to be wrapped up sooner rather than later. So I don't know where they land, but let's get to Rand Paul's idea. Now, he always votes against the CR. He's very consistent that way. I played some audio last week. I appreciate his principled stance on the spending because it drives me crazy how much money that we spend. But he has this six-penny plan. Can you explain how this would work, and is there merit to this plan?
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
No, absolutely. So the six-penny plan would cut government spending by 6%, 6 cents out of every dollar every year for 10 years. And if you did that, you would finally get the budget in balance. And again, I want to remind everybody listening that every dollar that the government spends on deficit is a dollar that either comes at the expense of raising mortgage rates and small business loan rates or raising inflation. Those are the two main ways that the government finances deficit spending. So, you know, his plan would end that burden, would get the government back to a stable size, and remove that burden from American, not just families and prospective home buyers, but also from small business owners and large businesses looking to borrow money to expand operations and hire more people with good paying jobs and produce more goods and services for people. So that's why he's put it forward, because, you know, think of it this way, Democrat leadership are trying to add to the deficit, you know, but even if we just do business as normal, you'll still get more addition to the deficit and more of that inflation and interest rate burden. So, you know, that's why he votes against these. That's why he puts up the six penny plan, is to showcase to the American public that, look, small cuts here aren't going to avoid bankruptcy and what the government has put down as a burden on the average American family.
I wish we could have a debate on this, like a national conversation about what this is all about and how we can do it, and how, you know, when Washington media and politicians say cuts to programs, they're talking about just a reduction in spending. So the way this would work is you'd have spending at 94% of current levels with annual reductions, as you indicated, of 6%. Now, I guess when he first introduced this in 2018, he said, look, all you needed was a spending freeze. Well, now, you know, the skyrocketing interest costs, everything we did during COVID has put that out of reach. But again, this is Rand Paul out there. People kind of put him into this corner. Why could we not have more of a discussion about actually reducing the debt and deficit and doing it in a realistic way? Because it should be more than just, you know, someone saying, oh, yeah, Rand Paul's got this penny plan. What's that all about? Who else is talking about it?
So I wish we could. I'm with you on that. Here's, I think, the tragic reality. And this is the thing they don't talk about, right, is we're used to the idea that you either need to cut spending or raise taxes. And I think we all know that if you raise taxes, it just means that you're sapping from the economy, you're stealing more from people. But there's really a third way, and that's hyperinflation and hyper high interest rates. And so really what I've come to, and now I've been here for a while, I've been doing this, what you realize is a lot of the political interests who don't want the conversation, they would genuinely prefer hyperinflation to cutting spending or raising taxes. And so, you know, I think at the end of the day, that's actually part of why this conversation doesn't happen. Now, look, it's easy to promise free government benefits and make it seem like you won't pay the bill for that. And I think a lot of that perpetuates all of this and means that people don't think they need to have the conversation. But it's the confluence of the two, right? It's this group of people who genuinely would prefer hyperinflation over seeing their benefits cut. And it's this other group of people who lie and promise the American public free stuff from the government without on people understanding that you'll pay the bill eventually anyway. And I think it's between those two things. That's why we can't have a real conversation about it.
Okay, and I'm a little confused. It was like maybe, I don't know if we technically went through hyperinflation in the last few years. It seems like we did. But why would they favor that? Because they favor more government spending?
Yeah, so and I would say, think of what happened during COVID. So we had a 20% spike. That was kind of micro hyperinflation. If you were going to try to get rid of the entire value of the debt through inflation, it would be much, much, much worse. But think of it this way. So, you know, there are people who get benefits from the government that are inflation adjusted. And so the government will always ensure, and that, I mean, some of that's welfare benefits, but a lot of it is industrial subsidies and tax breaks for this business over that business. But almost all of those are inflation adjusted. Mm-hmm. So, look, inflation could be a gajillion percent, and those people would still get the real value from the government that the government had to steal from somebody else. And I think if you walk through a lot of these programs and all these things, you keep coming back to that same story and that same gap between the special interests and the American public.
That makes a lot more sense, explaining it that way. Richard Stern, awesome to have you on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on. Yeah. Definitely a pleasure.
Have a great week.
Get more at 971talk.com.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.